Tango Tango Papa 1633, February 17, 2012.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Mantua. That was my iPod. Mantua, Ohio. That's along the, I'm actually along the the Ohio Turnpike Interstate 80 at one of the service plazas. It's not that far, if you're familiar with where the Lordstown General Motors plant is. It would be the next set of service plazas to the west. So probably about, I'm guessing, 20 miles or something west of the Lordstown plant, that Lordstown GM plant. Which you can, as you're driving along the Ohio Turnpike, you can see that along. It's on the north side, right beside the turnpike. So, but anyway, let's see. The load I have, I picked up early this morning in Elizabeth, New Jersey, and then that load. Delivers it's drop and hook on both ends. It delivers Saturday, whenever I get it there, Saturday afternoon in Melrose Park, Illinois. So I'll get up here probably early in the morning and I'd like to get to Melrose Park, I don't know, probably sometime early in the afternoon. Then after that, it looks like they've got a load that's planned, that picks up somewhere around there, I guess wherever it was, about 12 miles away according to the Qualcomm. And then that load will deliver, it's got two drops and it goes to Kentucky. And then the dispatcher was going to try to get with her on Monday, and she'd see about getting me a load going home, because I'm ready to go home. She asked me a day or two ago. She asked me if I'd like to be home in about a week, and I said yes. And so she's apparently working on it. I think company may have changed the dispatch system, because for quite some time now we've been going from dispatcher to dispatcher, and I'm not sure if they've changed that system, because lately I seem to have the same dispatcher all the time. I really don't want to know. I would rather not be too familiar with the way the system works, because that's always, I've found that if I'm too familiar with the way something works, or it's, or supposedly the way it's supposed to work, if I become too familiar with it, then I, there's this old saying, familiarity breeds contempt, and so I don't know. I would rather not know what's going on. Now they did change the. Something or other, they changed something, because now when I call the if I have to call them directly, they've changed the message, and now it says something about asset management, and they're instead of calling them dispatchers, now they're asset managers. So I don't know. I don't want to know either. As long as they keep me busy, as long as the paychecks go to the bank, and things work relatively smoothly, hey, That's really all I can ask for. And it again, I think it's a mistake to try to become too familiar with the way this, especially, I don't know, if you know how it's supposed to work, how you think the system is supposed to work, and then especially if you get too involved with people, too kind of buddy-buddy with them, it's, I don't know, it's just a prescription, it's a formula for mistake. And so I would rather keep the whole thing just, I don't want to know really how it works or how it's supposed to work. I don't want to know, unless the only thing that I want to know is what I'm directly involved with and how they pick loads or what process they go through. I really don't want to know that. It's not my department. So anyhow, so I'm on my way to Melrose Park, Illinois. And again, that's up by Chicago. And so, but I have been keeping busy the past several days. I don't know. It's all of the days kind of seem to blur together. I've been pretty busy. And so it's, then the other thing, my schedule has kind of gotten turned around a little bit. For example, I went to bed early last night, and then I set my alarm for 1:30 a.m. Central Time this morning. Left there, I guess it was about 2:15. I was at Hatfield, Pennsylvania, so I left there about 2:15 a.m., and so I've been up since then, so I'm going to have to be going to bed here in a bit. I just happen to remember I want to talk a little bit about GoToMeeting with HD Faces. So let me just go ahead and do that while I'm thinking about it. In today's fast-paced work environment, getting everyone in the same room for a meeting can be challenging, especially when they work in different locations. That's why you should use GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix. It's amazing. You can collaborate online by sharing your presentation while seeing colleagues face-to-face in high definition. Video quality is so clear and natural, it's like being in the same room. All you need is an internet connection and a webcam. It's so easy. You'll love GoToMeeting with HD Faces. You can share any document on your computer screen with everyone in your online meeting. While seeing their immediate reaction, facial expressions express so much more than words. With GoToMeeting with HD Faces, your meetings are more personal, engaging, and effective. I want you to try GoToMeeting with HD Faces today. My listeners can try it free for 30 days. Don't wait for the special offer. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. Be sure to use the promo code PODCAST. And so that takes care of that. The other thing I wanted to mention, Mevio. So apparently Mevio, I guess a week or two ago, a bunch of people had their Mevio accounts basically shut down. And then there was no word from Mevio at all. They just, you know, that for several days, it seemed like they were just completely tight-lipped and they weren't talking. And, you know, there were a number of people that were kind of bashing them on Twitter and Facebook and what have you in different places. And so they finally, someone finally came out and said, well, we'll make the thing available so that you can get your content. And then now there's someone put out a letter, basically, from Mevio saying that they are getting out of the audio podcasting business and they're concentrating on short-form video type stuff. I think they want to be more of a Revision 3 type of place, maybe, although I don't know. But so in any case, you know, they've made it available. You know, if you want, if you have a Mevio account and you've got content on there, they will make it so that you can, if you contact them, you can forward, have them forward, like your RSS feed, your Mevio RSS feed. You can forward that if you've got a functional URL to forward it to, an RSS URL. They can do that, and they'll do that for you. So that, at least you could do that. And then also, if you don't have your content saved, it would obviously, if it would be a good idea to try to save it while it's available. Now, I've got a ton of content, or had a ton of content on Mevio, but you know, over the years, I've saved basically every podcast that I've ever made. I've saved it, got it saved. It's at all at home, and there's really, let's say that, you know, the, at this point, I haven't even looked, you know, if the stuff, you know, is if it's still there, if it's still available, I don't know. I'm assuming it might be still available, you know, and then at some point they're going to just cut it off. But right now, supposedly, they've suspended any audio podcast's ability to upload new content. So, but in any case, I've got every podcast that I've ever recorded, but at the same time, it would be really kind of ridiculous to try to replicate that on a server, as far as being able to try to post it somewhere and put it into in any kind of a form where even people could right click and download it. It would, you know, we're talking 1600 and something podcasts. That would be that's a ton of material just to link to, let alone try to you know, upload it and do, you know, so on and so forth. So I'm not even going to try that. But I do, you know, of course, I do have the ability to upload the files, the MP3 files, to my own server, and I've done that in the past from time to time when I couldn't get Mevio to work. And so I'll probably, when I get a chance, I'm going to look into upgrading my hosting situation with GoDaddy so that I get a little bit more robust server, perhaps. And so I'll look into doing that to, you know, see how that will work. But I don't know. It's, but, you know, Mevio, I don't know. I think they kind of lacked direction, is the impression that I've gotten. Over time, they just sort of, I think once the venture capitalists kind of got involved and got money in it, then, you know, the original people kind of, you know, including Adam Curry, sort of lost control of it. And the direction, I don't know, they seem to have lost their direction. And but for the longest time, they were providing free podcast hosting accounts just to anyone that wanted a podcast, and they did that for quite some time. And so that apparently that's finally now at an end, and they're really trying to concentrate on the short-term video stuff. And that and there's probably if it's done right, there's obviously some money in it, you know, especially with there's advertising money in it. So, you know, because the, you know, any kind of short form video content, typically it can make money. There are people that are making money at it, and they're making money with ads as well. So it's not really surprising that, how long can a company like that provide free hosting for, you know, for just for anybody that wants it? So now, of course, the downside with that is that the free hosting can obviously go away at any point. So you kind of take that with a take that with a kind of a grain of salt, because it, you know, if someone's giving it away for free, then they can do whatever they want to with it, and they can certainly those sort of terms are subject to change without notice, and just bang, it can be one day it's there and the next day it's gone. So anyway, I've got a couple of audio comments. I've got one from Joel McLaughlin, and then I've got another one from Scott Mitchell, podteacher.com. And let's see, there, before I do that, though, excuse me, let me, I had a couple of other things here. Joel also sent a separate email this evening. I guess it was this morning. He says, every time I see stuff like this, I think you're more right than ever. And so he sent me a link to this. It's an MSNBC.com article. Atheists bill big names for coming out party in Capitol Hill. So atheists bill big names for coming out, quote unquote, coming out party in Capitol in the Capitol. The National Mall in Washington has hosted its share of rallies, some massive and iconic, like the famed Civil Rights March in 1963, which featured Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. Nonetheless, a scrappy coalition of atheists say they will make history on the Mall next month by pulling together what they say is the first nationwide celebration of secular values, what one of the organizers called a Woodstock for non-belief. The intent is to unify, energize, embolden secular people nationwide while dispelling the negative opinions held by much of the American society and having a damn good time doing it, according to the website for the March 24 Reason Rally, sponsored by Free Thinkers Organizations. Headliners for the Reason Rally is Richard Dawkins, a British evolutionary biologist and author who has been an especially scathing critic of creationism. Now, I think I've played his a couple of the TED talks that he's given, and he's really bitter, if that's the one I'm thinking about. Creationism and the intelligent design theory, embraced by some Christians. Other speakers scheduled to appear, including Taslima Nasrin, never heard of that, a physician, writer, and secular humanist who has tangled with Islamic extremists in her home country of Bangladesh. Good luck on that one. And Jessica Alquist, never heard of her, the 16-year-old in Rhode Island who led the successful crusade against a prayer banner in her high school. But the damn good time promised by the Reason Rally site surely refers to entertainers billed for the event, including Mythbusters co-host Adam Savage, known for his propensity for blowing up various things, including conventional wisdom, on the weekly Discovery Channel program. Also billed as appearing is musician-comedian Tim Minchin. Don't know who that is. A self-described atheist and skeptic and Bad Religion, a punk rock band that has been performing since the 1980s and is known for their Crossbuster logo, created by band members when they were still teens practicing in a garage. Just how many atheists will make the trek to the DC rally is unclear, since it doesn't require any registration. There's electricity in our movement, said Dan Barker, a co-president of the Madison, Wisconsin-based nonprofit Freedom From Religion Foundation, a principal sponsor of the Reason Rally. From what we feel, there's going to be a huge turnout, but who knows? Easier to quantify is the growing number of Americans who say they do not identify with any God-centric religion. People who call themselves a lot of different things, including atheists, agnostics, religious skeptics, and secular humanists. They all go into the category of secular fundamentalists, as that's the term coined by Rabbi Daniel Lappin, and I think it really does fit. Because he contends that this is a religion. This type of atheism, this secular humanism, is secular fundamentalism is a religion, and these people are in the process of proselytizing. Anyway, this goes on. The American Religious Identification Survey, carried out by researchers at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut, showed growth in this non-religion or no religion portion of the population since 1990. The so-called nuns made up 15% of the U.S. population in 2008, up from 8% in 1990, according to the survey. The survey showed the nuns skewed young, with about 30% between 18 and 30 years of age. Now, that's probably true. We've got fully half of children overall being born outside of marriage. No dad. Just a mom, who in many cases don't even know who dad is. Just shack up or whatever. Just unwanted byproducts of sex. And so it stands to reason that, these people are leading the moral decay. This goes on. Non-religion is the fastest growing religion, while Christianity is shrinking, said Barker, once a Protestant minister. There is something happening. The Reason Rally seems to be riding that wave. One of the goals of the gathering is to encourage attendees to come out of the closet as secular Americans or supporters of secular equality, according to the website. To that end, organizers have arranged for a video address by Representative Peter Stark, the only member of Congress who has declared himself a non-theist. Last year, Stark introduced a resolution calling for the designation of February 12 as Darwin Day to honor evolutionary science pioneer Charles Darwin. See, now, they worship Darwin almost like he's some sort of a god. The Reason Rally will weigh in with messages aimed at blunting the influence of religion, the religious right in this election year. God fixation won't fix this nation, and I'm secular and I vote. Will the atheists face counter-protests on the mall? We would be flattered if there were, said Barker. It would mean we were noticed. So how much you want to bet that not many people show up? But the news media, the mainstream news media, will probably, they're very adept taking small crowds and making them look larger than they are. Now, when the Tea Party was on the mall, whenever it was, a couple of years ago, that was a huge crowd, and the media did their best to ignore it. They really did their best to just completely not even report it, like it didn't happen. But I don't know. It's interesting I believe in God. In fact, I know there's a God. I can't prove to you that I know that there's a God, but I know it as surely as I'm sitting here in my truck. There is a God. But I don't go around pounding people over the head. And these people, they have something similar. They have something in common with, let's just pick something out of the air. The abortion, so-called abortion rights people. they wear that on their sleeve. You know, they'll go around and, you know, or and they'll almost pound you over the head, you know, that with they use that almost like an identity. And so these people, they're what they want to do, and it's true of any group of people. It's true of any group of people that they're guilty. They're really guilty people, but what they'll do, they try to degrade the people around them. So they'll try to shock people, you know, the people around them with their behavior. Or in this case, you know, with their speech or whatever, you know, but the intent will be to try to shock. Now, it's also interesting that these people are all leftists. Yeah, that's what these people's political orientation is, completely predictable. They're leftists, of course. They're collectivists. Big government is their god. Abortion is one of the sacraments of their secular fundamentalist religion. And as a fundamentalist religion, they've got to try to obliterate every other religion. They want to force everybody to worship the government. But at the same time, these people also want to remove people's hope. They want to destroy. They'll say, "Oh, we just want to have fun," or whatever. "We want to have a time," you know. He couldn't, you know. He says, "Damn good time, not just a good time, but a damn good time." But they want to destroy people's faith. They want to, you know, take people that, you know, are kind of mixed up, that are kind of lost, you know, capture those people. Their hope is to capture those people and take whatever remaining hope they have away. But at this point, I don't even care about these people. You know, and ultimately, if you leave these people to their own devices, they self-destruct. They really do self-destruct. They have a tendency to self-destruct, you know, as individuals and overall as a group. But especially as individuals, they tend to self-destruct. So just let them do whatever they want to do. Who cares? All they're trying to rile up people, you know, get people agitated that do have religion, so on and so forth. And I don't care what these people do. They can jump up and down and turn green. Who cares? They have one thing in common. They're bitter. They're angry. They're full of rage, full of resentment. And the only pleasure that someone like this can take is in destroying other people, destroying things that are good, tearing society down, tearing things down. That's the only pleasure that they get. That's the only pleasure that they can experience. You know, if you want to call that pleasure. So the cure for that is to don't resent them back. Don't resent them back. You know, I can look at somebody like this Richard Dawkins. He's so full of rage, so full of resentment. And I have a neutral feeling about him. What a fool. He's wasting his existence. He's wasting his life away. So, anyway, let me go ahead and play Joel's comment. I haven't listened to this at all, so it's about 6 minutes and 45 seconds. So here is Joel.
Hey, Tom. Joel McLaughlin from the Life in Ohio podcast. I actually haven't recorded an episode in about a month, but I hopefully will be able to record one here very soon. Mostly to talk about the new car I've had for about almost a month. We bought a 2012 Chevy Cruze LT1, and it has several features that are very similar to your truck. I had the same experience discovering new features of my car as you are having currently with your truck. My car probably has as many features, if not more features, than your truck does, I would believe. One of the features that all GM vehicles have now, and that they include a 6-month trial of, is OnStar. And OnStar, it's got 3 buttons on your rear view mirror, plus there's also some buttons on your steering wheel for operating the Bluetooth functions on your phone. But it's more than just pressing a button and getting a hold of a human to ask them questions and to help you if you need assistance. But it's very useful for that, of course, but some of the other features that OnStar has is pretty cool. Like, you can call the OnStar person and you say, hey, what's the closest pizza place, or where's the closest gas station to where I'm at? And then they'll send the directions right down to your vehicle. Very handy to have. You can also do the same thing with an app on your phone. There's an app for OnStar for both iPhone and for the Android phones. So it's a pretty cool system, the OnStar is, but if that's all that was in the car, that would be very cool. But there's also Sirius XM radio in every GM vehicle as well. And that, I think you've used that in the past and probably don't pay for it anymore. We'll probably go ahead and continue to pay for it when the Sirius trial is only 3 months. But we'll probably go ahead and pay for it because my wife actually likes using the different stations on Sirius XM radio. My armrest underneath the armrest in the that compartment is a USB port, a 1/8 inch jack, and a SD card slot. The SD card slot, you can put an SD in there and put all kinds of music on there, and it'll play through the car stereo. And of course, the USB port can be used to charge, not only to charge your phone, but also to play music on it on your phone. On Android phones, the one little problem it has with that is it actually detects every single sound file that you have on your SD card. That could include ringtones. So since there's really no way on Android phones to tell it, hey, I want you to play these songs in this, or these podcasts in this order, then it's kind of not as useful. So I usually just use it for charge only. In the other parts of the car, it has actually cigarette jacks all over the place. So I actually bought one of those double USB jack cigarette lighter adapters, so we can recharge multiple things via USB. Now, if you do plug an iPod in there, it does recognize it as an iPod and actually sees the playlists on it. So you could set up the playlists for your podcasts and not have to touch a thing, which is very, very handy if you have an iPod. And I actually still have my old 60 gigger. I actually, for my regular podcast listener, I use a Sensa Clip Zip, which is a nifty, tiny little MP3 player. It's kind of like the Shuffle, but it has a screen on it, and it's actually very readable, too, surprisingly enough. It's only about an inch screen, but it's sufficient for my needs. Since I ride the bus, it doesn't really matter to me as much having a podcast playlist. So, anyway, the car itself, it gets good, great gas mileage, and it has other systems in it too that I would categorize as, you know, along with the OnStar system, as telematics. For example, there is a display both on the dash and in the OnStar app that will show you what the air pressure is in all four tires. There is a display in your OnStar app that will show you the current fuel levels and also the oil life. There is a display that in there that will show you how many miles per gallon you typically get. So there's all sorts of information the OnStar system can have. The OnStar app can also send navigation instructions to your car. Very handy to have, and I've used the heck out of it. And then, trying to think of anything else. Oh yes, since my car has actually a pretty fat key on it. One other function it has on the key, you know, is of course your unlock lock and like a panic button kind of feature. And it also has a button to unlock your trunk. Well, my car also has remote start, so from inside my house, I can use the key fob to start my car. The OnStar app also includes a button where you can restart your car from the internet, from your car's or phone's internet connection. So now you might think that might not be too secure, but it actually is quite secure because your OnStar app actually has to be logged in, and you actually have to type in a PIN code before the vehicle will do anything. And even then, your doors remain locked on the vehicle, and you cannot put it in gear until you put your key in. So, now I'll probably do a full, more in-depth review of the Chevrolet Cruze on the Life on the Highway podcast, but I just found it interesting that they're starting to include all these kinds of systems in vehicles. So, this has been Joel from Life on the Highway podcast, talking to Trucker Tom.
Okay, well, thank you, Joel. Yeah, that sounds pretty interesting. Once you essentially create a 24/7 data connection to a vehicle, then you're really only limited by your imagination as to what you can do with that. Now... If you, I don't know, now I saw an article earlier, Nevada, the state of Nevada, Google's been trying to, you know, get the state of Nevada to pass laws, kind of enabling them to, you know, have the driverless vehicles, the Google driverless vehicles. You remember, I don't know, it's been several months ago, there were all those stories. They've been testing it, testing the driverless cars. You know, the computer was driving the car with the, I guess they had a passenger. They had someone in there that could take control if there was a problem. But they tested that around the San Francisco Bay Area, and they logged up quite a few thousand miles doing that. And so you could imagine that... if completely driverless cars were legal, then you could just basically call up your car, or, you know, use the app on your iPod or your iPhone or your Android phone, and tell the car to, you know, that you want it to, you know, come here, you know, wherever you're at, or, you know, that type of thing, come pick me up. And so that's there's all kinds of things you can do. It's, again, we're just sort of limited by our imagination. But, you know, I was thinking about that today. Now, you could call, let's say that, you know, that it's legal to have a driverless car, and obviously, they, you know, those driverless cars actually do work. So, one function, like I just said, you could, if you needed the car to come get you for whatever reason, then you could do that. Or let's say you were flying somewhere and you didn't want to put your car in long-term parking at the airport, so you could just send it back home to park and then come back and get you whenever you needed it again. That would be something you could do with it. But otherwise, cars aren't going to just be out driving around for no reason. They're not, you know, there's no reason for the car to go joyriding, basically. So typically, unless the car you're bringing, telling the car that you want it to come to you, let's say to pick you up or something, normally a car like that or a vehicle like that would be hauling people around, the machine was driving the car, it would still be hauling people around. Now, maybe, I guess, if you were commuting to work, you could the car would be driving you, and you could be reading your newspaper or texting on your phone or whatever while it was driving you to work. But in any case, the vehicles aren't, you know, they're going to have to be ferrying people around typically. They're not just going to be driving around just because, you know. So, I don't know. It's kind of interesting, and I think it's going to be a while before people really accept driverless vehicles. But in the meantime, there are all kinds of things that they can do to sort of interface the pocket computer that you have now in your smartphone. There's all kinds of interesting things that they can do to kind of interface that with your vehicle. And with both devices, if you want to call your car a device, being connected to the internet 24/7, then it your car could, let's say it could, if there's a problem, it could call you or it could email you. Hey, I got a problem. My tires are low, you know. So there's some interesting things that are possible. If you just have to dream them up. So, but anyway, thank you for the voice file. So I've got this last file that I have from Scott. And I haven't listened to this either. It's 6 minutes and 54 seconds. So here is Scott.
Yeah, I have another comment, question, whatever, on the election about, pray that Obama doesn't get in there. Well, right now, if I was a betting man, I'd bet that the alternative to him is going to be Romney. I mean, we're pretty early in this process, but Romney's looking really good. He's really busting it open here out of the starting gate, and unless somebody like Obama comes along who can just kind of quickly catch up and go ahead from the back of the pack, I don't know. I got to say this, that I like Ron Paul, and he was kind of my choice, but I think he's the only one that would offer any real change. And I think whichever gets in, Romney or Obama, I think everything is going to be the same old, same old. Everybody told me what an extreme end, you included, that an extreme end liberal that Obama was, and he didn't turn out to be any of that. I was hoping.
What planet are you living on? Or better yet, what country are you living in? Hasn't turned out to be a liberal? So let's go through some things. They've got Obamacare. Okay, check. Push that through. What else has he done? You know, it's just, hasn't turned out to be a liberal. Hasn't turned out to be a collectivist. I don't understand how you can say that. Are you not paying attention? If Obama is reelected, if we have an election, I'm hoping we have an election, November 2012, I'm hoping we have an election. There's a good chance, I still think, you can laugh it up, I think there's a good chance there won't be an election. If we have an election, and if Obama wins that election, watch out. Because look at all the things he's already done. Just thing after thing after thing. you know, force the Catholics to include abortion. Internet kill switch. Legal to scoop you up. If they can say, if the government considers you a some kind of subversive, they can just scoop you up and you disappear and never to be heard from again. No due process. You just disappear. And so if Obama doesn't have to face another election and he's got four more years, watch out. He's acting like a dictator now. Just wait. Just wait. But how you could say he hasn't been, that he's not been a leftist, I don't know what country you're living in.
But he was an extreme man on certain things, and he absolutely wasn't. He continued the Bush doctrine. He kept us in the same wars. Very little of anything changed from the way it would have been if Bush had stayed in, if he could have stayed in. So I don't see the big difference. I don't see him as an extreme and liberal. He seems to be a moderate, kind of a weak Democrat or liberal in that regard. Romney, on the other hand, is most certainly not an extreme and conservative. At best, he could be called a moderate conservative. At worst, he could be called a rhino, like Scott Brown. All the Republicans that get in Massachusetts are generally rhinos. They really are not Republicans, and they're most definitely moderate, and will vote in ways you wouldn't like Scott Brown did not help out the Republicans in getting rid of Obamacare, and he was not on that side, and Romney wouldn't have been either. And so if Romney gets the nomination, I can just see the debate between Romney and Obama when he sits down and says, "So you're different from me, how?"
Oh, I agree with that. I actually agree with you there. You know, Romney is a weak candidate, and for some strange reason, the people that run the Republican Party want Romney. They're trying their damnedest to see that Romney gets the nomination. Now, so far, they thought it was going to be a slam dunk, and so far, it hasn't been. So it's still fairly unclear. They tried to create the perception, oh, Romney's got it all sewn up. These other guys might as well just go home. Well, that hasn't happened. But if Romney's a nominee, then, you know, he's basically Obama light.
You know, I mean, you are absolutely for a government healthcare system, and that's the very thing you hate, Tom. He's been for so many things that are very Democrat-like.
Now, when did I say I hated it? I wouldn't use that terminology. I took completely against it. It's absolutely wrong. It's the wrong thing to do. The government should not be kind of doling out this or doling out that, or mandating that you do this or mandating that you do that, creating dependency, trying to force people to look at government as if it's God and be part of the godless collective. You know, the different, you know, I've said before, you know, if apart from the buildings and the officials, the government officials, can you tell me where the government, where it is? It doesn't exist. It's imaginary. You know, if these atheists that I was talking about, you know, they'll say, oh, well, you know, there was this billboard that they put up in Colorado somewhere. You know, God is your imaginary friend. No, government is your imaginary. If God's your imaginary friend, then so's government. Government's your imaginary friend. And it ain't your friend. It doesn't exist. It's just an imaginary little thing that people have like with the atheists, you know, or other people that are guilty people. Somehow the government is gonna say things, you know, make things official and make things okay. Take conscience away. Make people comfortable being rotten. But of course, it ends in hell. It always ends in hell, and these stupid people always think that, oh well, the right people didn't try it. They just didn't do it right. They should have done it this way, or they should have tweaked it that way, and they could have made it work. It cannot work. Cannot. It never has worked. It never will work. It cannot work. People that put their faith in the, you know, some kind of faith and trust in the government, when it comes right down to it, you put your faith in the government, some kind of government program, you know, somehow that's going to save you. Regardless of whether you claim to believe in God or not, bottom line, where the rubber meets the road, you don't really believe in God. Because if you really know, if you actually can know that there is a God, and not just believe that there's a God, but know there's a God, then you don't need the government. You don't need the government making its empty promises. You don't need the illusion that someone, you know, that somehow someone's going to save you. Someone else is going to pay your way. And so that's why these people sort of know that, and they're trying to destroy people's faith. They're trying to destroy, make it impossible for people to know that there's a God. To sever their connection with God. And it's easy to do that. All you got to do is get people to resent. They resent anyway. We come into this world resenting, wanting to resent, wanting to play God in our own minds. And so it's very easy to just lock people in. You just make them, get them to resent, get them upset, get them, stir that rage up, stir that resentment up, stir up the animosity, stir up their judgment, because it's judgment. Stir up their judgment, and that cuts them off from who they could have been. It cuts them off from their God-given identity. And then they're good little atheists. Good little birds with their mouths stuck straight up in the air, waiting for Big Mama government to come put a worm in it.
Like, because he is really a rhino. So you best hope that he doesn't get in if you're hoping for any changes. And if you think any Republican is better than any Democrat, I would disagree with that. I would say that what you're going to get is most likely one consummate politician against another. One pretty boy politician against another. One very smooth politician against another. because all, you know, Obama and Romney are all of these things. You know, they got the looks. They're smooth. They're politically savvy. Consummate politicians. And that's the very reason I never would have voted for him. I'll be honest with you. I don't dislike them as much as I would like an extreme end anything. I don't want an extreme end conservative, and I don't want an extreme end liberal, because I'm a moderate. So moderate kind of makes sense. But I want a different kind of a moderate, and I guess that's why Ron Paul sort of appeals to me, because he's a strict constitutionalist, and I think you and I have had common ground on that one. And I think he would head a little more in the right direction on things. I do have some disagreements, but I guarantee you he would have had us out of those wars that we were in, where neither these presidents helped out with that. I think if he gets in, he would restore our basic rights that have been taken away from us by Bush and Obama under the Patriot Act, which Obama did not get rid of, didn't even try to. In fact, he kind of went more forward on it. I could go on, but I think Ron Paul would have been a much better candidate, will be if he can get it, and I don't think he will. I think he would be a better choice, but if it comes down, as I think it's going to Romney versus Obama, I might as well just sit it out, because it isn't going to matter.
Well, it is going to matter. Even if it is Romney, it is going to matter. Obama is basically, he's a dictator. And if Obama, if there's an election and Obama wins it, kiss your country goodbye. No more United States of America as we've known it. It's almost unrecognizable as it exists right now. This isn't the country that I grew up in. But again, you know, so it is, it does matter. I mean, and I think whoever the Republican nominee is, I hope if we have an election, I think that Obama is going to get rejected, and I think that whoever the Republican nominee is will probably win. But that's not going to solve it. That's not going to really solve the problem. The basic problem is our lack of, overall, our lack of morals. I've talked about this endlessly. As the American people, our lack of morals, our morals have gone into the toilet. And so we're seeing these opportunistic infections. Sort of take over. Because we, you know, our immune system is basically, our immune system is destroyed, or it's severely weakened. Because of the moral decay, cultural rot, moral rot. America has, you know, in large part, has turned into a moral hellhole. And so these infections, you know, there are always people that want to take over the world. There are always groups of people that want to take over the world, take things over. People have been plotting that for years, how they would do it. The only way you can take a country like America over is to just, you know, to, you know, help facilitate destroying the morals. And it's something that happens naturally anyway. Look at every country in the history of the world. The same problem. You know, it ends in moral rot, and then the thing finally falls. It ends under a dictator, or something happens, and it, you know, then you end up with, you know, it just falls apart. In our case, it just happened faster because we got better communications. So even if Santorum, let's say Santorum wins, let's be optimistic. Let's say Santorum's the nominee and Santorum wins. Or it could just, you know, it could just be Romney. Whoever the president is, and let's say it's a Republican. Don't know which one, it's a Republican. We're bankrupt. We've maxed out the credit, bankrupt, printing money. There's hell to pay because of the way we've lived as a nation. You know, borrowing all this money, spending all this money, wasting so many resources on nonsense. There's hell to pay. So whoever ends up being, you know, let's say it's a Republican ends up getting the, you know, becoming president. It's not going to be, we can just, you know, go back to partying. We're out of money. Right now, they're just trying to keep things together just kind of long enough so that, you know, if Obama can, basically, if Obama and the Democrats can kind of keep things together long enough, then, you know, they think that things will fall apart, you know, and everybody will be just completely enslaved, and then it's going to be too late. Sort of like what's happening to Greece. There are forces that are deliberately turning America into Greece. It's absolutely deliberate. And in fact, it serves us right. We get the government that we deserve. Our morals have gone into the toilet. They really have. So regardless of what happens, chances are things are not going to be very pleasant for a lot of people.
You know, nothing at all is going to change if those are our choices. And you can wait for another 4 years of humdrum economy. If it does recuperate, it will be pure chance. I heard the Fed this morning, the Fed was saying things are getting better, and I thought, wouldn't it be interesting if all by itself, just from people deciding that they were going to spend a little more money and all that, made the economy get better on their own? It's never going to recover to where it was, and each high is going to be lower than the last. Each low is going to be lower than the last. We're in a cyclic economy. We always generally are. It's a cycle. It has been just about forever. It's like a sine wave. But it's a sine wave heading downhill as opposed to going, you know, sideways or heading uphill, which is even better. We're currently on a sine wave heading downhill. Each low lower than the next, each high lower than the next. So we may get a high out of this, but it's not going back to the good old days. And in fact, there will be a new lower low later on because we're not doing the right things that could make things come back. I talk about that in my podcast. So wouldn't it be interesting if the economy gets a whole lot better? And then here's Romney versus Obama, and here's Romney looking so good and all that, but at the same time, the economy's not good, and people hate to rock the boat. They vote their bottom line issue. Obama, you know, is just as good looking. He is just as much a consummate politician. He'll call Romney on all their similarities, and people start thinking, yeah, you know, right, there isn't a lot of difference between them, and I don't want to take a chance with the economy. Ah, what the heck. You could very easily see Obama getting in there again under those conditions, I think. That would be like the worst case scenario, where my bet would be on Obama getting back in if that happens, if the economy does get better like the Fed says it is, and Romney becomes his competition. I think you'll be giving it back to him. All right, those 2 cents worth on that.
Okay, well, thank you, Scott. No, I don't think so. I think, you know, we keep, of course, because of the media, we keep forgetting about what happened in 2010 with the midterm elections and what a resounding shellacking the Democrat Party got all the way down to county dog catcher. Democrats got ousted. And the media has tried to cause us to forget that. And, you know, I think that we're, you know, probably that's going to repeat in 2012. But again, that, you know, whoever becomes president, that's not going to solve the problem. You know, there are people that think, oh, well, I want the economy to be better, but I still want my rotten ways. Want to be able to live my rotten life and just, you know, do what I do and, you know, have my bad morals, but I want a better economy. Want the government to take care of me, but I want a better economy. The problem is it can't happen. And we've printed and borrowed and printed and borrowed and printed to the point where it's going to crash. It's got to get to the point where it crashes. You know, take a look at what's happening in Greece right now. That's where we're headed. That's precisely where we're headed. They're ahead of us. That's just where we're headed. So the only answer is if we somehow have a moral revival, you want to call it a moral revival, religious revival, that is what has to happen. You know, you could call it a great awakening, because that's happened a couple of times in the past. We've had a couple of great awakenings. Same thing, you know, or moral revival. That can happen. It has happened in the past. It potentially could happen now. And that's the only thing that could save us. Because otherwise, we're descending into slavery. That's precisely what it is slavery. You're enslaved to the government. You're enslaved to some sort of dictator, some sort of an externalized dictator, because you don't have a genuine identity. You become responsive to whatever the greatest external pressure is. And of course, if you're if you can be pressured, you will be pressured. Nature abhors a vacuum. So the world could easily plunge into a brand new dark age. Look at history. It's happened over and over again. So if you want to make your life better, you got to do it yourself. The government's not going to do it for you. Government's not going to save you. It can't. The collective can't save you. And if you've put your faith into the collective, your faith is misplaced. Your belief is misplaced. And then we've created all of these people that, you know, that are involved in this Occupy thing for the most part, and they've had stuff handed to them their entire lives. Mommy and daddy have spoiled them. They want somebody else to pay for this and pay for that and pay for their education and, you know, pay for this, pay for that. They don't want to work. America and the Western world has been, but especially in America, has been so prosperous. Just unbelievably prosperous to the point where we have this generation now that has been spoiled. Everything's been handed to them. And they have no clue how difficult it really is to scratch a living out of the earth. I've given this example before, but it's worth rehashing. Rethinking about. Imagine, you know, like the Twilight Zone episode. You're the only person left. All of a sudden, everybody else is gone. Empty cities. You're the only person left. You've got free run of everything. Everything suddenly belongs to you. Well, the problem is there's no electricity, no one is refining oil, pumping oil, and there's no, you know, you're going to run out of gasoline. And eventually all the cans are going to bulge that are left in the supermarkets, that's going to rot. Sooner or later, you're going to be reduced to trying to plant a garden somewhere and hope like hell that a natural disaster doesn't come and wipe you out. And sooner or later, it probably would. You probably wouldn't survive. You know, the Tom Hanks thing, you remember the movie, I can't think of the name of it now, where he was stranded, you know, he's the FedEx guy, and the plane crashed, and he was stranded on the island for, you know, like 5 years or whatever, however long it was supposed to be. Somehow he survived. Alone. In the real world, that probably wouldn't happen. In the real world, he would have probably died. Might have survived a while. But in the real world, he probably wouldn't have survived for very long. We don't survive alone. We do work. Each one of us does different things. We work. We dig things out of the ground. We make things, create goods and services. And we're able to survive. But then the problem is, well, what system? What system do we use? And the trouble is that the guilty people, the people that want to, that are playing God in their own minds and won't face reality, hate. They literally end up hating, resenting their conscience, resenting the identity that God offers us. They resent that identity. And so therefore, they try to destroy it. That's what's driving these atheists and so on and so forth. They hate to see an example of people that actually have a semblance of a God-given identity. It drives them nuts because it reminds them of what they've fallen away from. It reminds them of the conscience that they're trying to run away from, that they're trying to destroy. They're trying to replace it with a man-made concoction. Of course, it's evil. Evil owns them. Evil possesses them. So it's basically, we have either God runs us, a genuine God-given identity. We can't see it, smell it, touch it. It's spiritual. It's kind of intangible. It's very real, but it's you have that system versus a system that is kind of run by evil, but evil promises that you can really be God. That's the lie. And of course, the lie lies. So it's really a system of, one intangible system versus the other. One appeals to the wrong side of your ego, and the other requires that you give that wrong side up. That you turn your back on the wrong side of your ego. So it's basically a system of, it's one system versus the other. But we, as human beings, we have a choice. God gives us a choice. Because had God created us with no choice, then we would, let's say that, we'd act on the system that we should. We'd always do the right thing. We would never have, we wouldn't know it though. We'd just automatically do it. We couldn't help ourselves. We would be enslaved to do the right thing, whether we wanted to or not. Couldn't, just as a, you know, a snake has to, it has its snake nature, and it just, it has its snake instincts, and it just does what snakes do. It responds to its snake environment, and it just does, you know, it just does what it does. Same way with any other creature that you can name, except human beings. Human beings have a choice as to what makes our makes us human, what makes our identity. We have a choice. But had God created us with no choice, we would just simply be sort of intelligent robots. But there would be no choice. It'd be like a, you know, you'd have a Barbie doll, and you pull the, I don't know if they still make those, they probably don't, you know, where you pull the string and you let it go, and then, you know, and then it pulls back in, and it's got a little record in there or a little cylinder, and it says, "I love you, I love you, I love you." That's what we would be if we didn't have a choice. And so that's why evil exists, to give us a choice. And so that's why I say, and it's worth repeating again and again and again, maybe someone will finally understand what I'm saying. That's why I say we're not here, at least I'm not here. The purpose of my life is not to eat as much and, you know, eat as many pleasurable meals as I can. The purpose of my life is not to travel around and, you know, see the world, go sightseeing. The purpose of my life is not to have as, you know, find as much pleasure as I possibly can. The purpose of my existence is to develop my character. And that's the only thing that gives meaning. That gives meaning to this existence. You develop your character by bonding, your creator bonds with you, and all you can do is have a willingness to allow that to happen. You have to have a willingness to get the hell out of the way and allow that to happen. And that's the only thing that gives meaning to this life. At least for me. So the idea that, oh, you can just, you know, eat, drink, and be merry, and, you know, and try to live some kind of quote-unquote well-adjusted life or whatever, that's nonsense. What's the point? What the hell is the point of that? What's the point of trying to travel and trying to do this and trying to do that? And somehow thinking that that's going to make you happy. It's empty. The more you do it, the emptier it becomes. So, anyhow, probably better be cutting this off, see if I can get get this thing uploaded somewhere. Don't know if I'll... I might try uploading it to Mevio. I don't think that'll work, though. So I'll probably just upload it to my own server. In any case, hope everyone had a great week. Hope you have a great weekend. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.